My name is John Paul Watt, and I was born here in Tuscumbia, Alabama, at Helen Keller. But about the time I got to grade school, I moved up to Loretta, Tennessee, which is about, 25 minutes north of here, just across the state line. So, and I lived there until I got out of high school and came down here to University of North Alabama. So I've never lived anywhere other than, pretty much 30 square mile radius of, it's all I've ever known. And that shaped me as a musician, just like it does everyone around here, but maybe slightly differently, because growing up in Loretta, I might as well have been 100 miles from fame or from Muscle Shoals, because it's just a different culture. It was more good old boy southern rock country music was what was being played up and down the state line. Because until the 80s, I think early 80s, maybe 83, something like that, it was dry down here. So everybody came up to the Tennessee bars on the state line. Well, that's where I was. And that culture didn't change after Lauderdale went wet. People still frequented those same places. And so it was a mash of Alabama and Tennessee rednecks, for lack of a better term. And I was one of those. And so I learned you have to be able to play Lynyrd Skynyrd, and you have to be able to play George Strait or George Jones, but you also have to be able to play AC/DC or, Bad Company or try to play what was ever the hit at the time. But there was also R&B and soul music that, you'd play a gig and Spooner Oldham would be on that gig, or you'd play a gig and David Hood would be there playing before or after you. And little by little, by osmosis, you start realizing the history and the heritage that was around you. I lived on a chicken farm in the middle of nowhere, so I wasn't really that cognizant of it. My parents said they make records down in the Shoals, but that didn't mean anything to me. I didn't know what that meant. And so until I got to college, I really wasn't immersed in it. I was somehow in a bubble with limited knowledge of what was going on. And when I came here, then I lost my mind, because I was around so many kindred spirits and had such a close proximity to producers and publishers and studios and musicians, but also promoters and, clubs and stuff, that it was few and far between. Even though I was only 30 miles away. And it's a different era, because people are used to the connectivity that they have now. And the only records you knew when you were growing up then was whatever records your parents had or whatever records your friends had. That was it. There was no MTV. There was no videos. There was ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, and that was it. And so you freaked out when the Grammys came on, because you got to see the faces of all the people that you listened to on Top 40 radio. So until I was out of high school almost, in the early 90s, I graduated in 90, you just didn't have the information that you do now, that my kids have now. And it shaped me. It made me who I was. And my kids are going to be, I don't mean this as a bad word, but it'll be more homogenous the way they go around, the way they have taken, they've taken in everything from around the world at their fingertips. So they're not beholden to whatever people around them are listening to. They can listen to jazz from any era. They can listen to world music, African. There's nothing that will make them sound Southern anymore. Mm. And that makes me sad, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that's awesome. So did you cut your teeth on the state line bars? Like, when did you start playing?
I was 16. I started playing when I was 16, as well. I just entered a talent show with some buddies of mine, and they figured out that I could sing, and I didn't know it. I just knew that little old ladies at church said I could, but they happened to be musicians, these friends of mine, and so we formed a little band overnight, and I mean nothing else mattered on earth. And so as soon as possible, you know, the drummer Anthony Weathers, his dad was a really good bass player up and down the state line over in Minor Hill, and so we were able to get gigs and or go to gigs and sit in with the band and play songs and stuff. And it was a world I barely knew existed, and I immersed myself in it really fast.
That's awesome. What was the name of the band, the high school band?
The original band was Aberration, which was it's a good name. It's a good metal band name. We were definitely a metal band, but we had to explain our name to every single person that would ask our name. We got sick of that.
That's great. So I've seen the State Line bars up Savannah Highway. And yeah. Then we started taking a new route to Nashville and saw all those over in Minor Hill.
Sure.
I've heard about all those, and some of those were just completely off my radar. I had no idea that was there.
You
were just kind of wherever, wherever somebody let you play, or
but also like on the state line below Loretta, on the state line over toward Iron City, and Parker's Place, and Johnny's Club, and Pink Pony, and Bumpers, and Little Sands, and I played all of them, and it was good times. There's parts of me that miss it because there was very little responsibility. There was very little. We weren't really trying to grab any brass ring. We were just weren't even writing songs. We were just trying to play whatever the crowd, whatever we could feel the crowd like light up. That's what stayed in the set list. And so ballads, you just get rid of them because people would dance to the ballads, but you figured out really quickly what people want, what they don't, and you start noticing little trends of why that's the case, what's the similarities. So I think that I was learning how to write songs without even knowing it by doing that, and I wish everybody could cut their teeth that way and trial by fire, play a song that you think's cool and the entire place just stares at you like, yeah, that's, we're not dancing to Rush, dude. That kind of thing.
So what about the writing? Like, when did you become interested in story? Like, your songs are very narrative, I think, and was that something, like, some kids or young people just seem, like, completely oblivious to story, and some people are just completely enamored with it. Like, when did you realize that you were interested in story, and then how did that transition to you becoming a writer?
As early as I can possibly remember, I read everything I could get my hands on. And my mom was a big reader as well. But again, we lived out on a farm in the middle of nowhere, so TV, there wasn't a lot of options. It wasn't that much to entertain. And this is, it's pre-video games too, We didn't have a lot of money, so even, when Atari came out, or when Nintendo, when the Sega Genesis stuff, when all that stuff came out, everybody else had it. And I'd play it when I went to their house, but we didn't have any of that stuff. So you learned how to entertain yourself. This is pre-VHS VCRs, too. So it's hard to remember that, but that's why I read everything I can get my hands on. And so I always loved literature. I always loved creative writing in school. It just came natural. I enjoyed a good story. My dad's a fantastic storyteller, and all of his family is too. I would sit at their knee when they'd come over. It was my favorite thing when they'd come over to the house. They'd smoke cigarettes, which none of us did, and they'd drink beer. None of us did. Well, we were Catholics, so everyone in the family did, but not at our house. They weren't teetotalers, they just didn't. But, and then the stories would come out, and they'd always talk about the old days and the crazy stuff that they got into. And I just lapped it up. I couldn't get enough of it. But I wrote a little bit of poetry, but I never aspired to write songs. I don't know why. I wasn't around anybody that did, and it didn't seem like... It didn't seem that important to me. I just wanted to sing. I enjoyed that so much that I put every single egg in that basket until I got to college. And I only wrote songs then because I was trying to get in the door and become a singer. And I thought it would round out my resume.
This is in college, yeah, like at UNA.
Yeah. And when I started doing that, I hated it. I hated writing songs because I think I might have been the head of the curve in knowing how bad my songs were. And I think a lot of young writers know that everything they write is great. I was not that guy. Everything I wrote was crap. And it drove me nuts. And I'd hear somebody else's song and be like, that's so much simpler than my song is, and it's brilliant. You know, I just have to keep whittling it down, quit trying to be so clever, quit trying to be so smart, quit trying to say 17 things when you should just say one. You know, all of my songs were epics. You know, I could never get them under 5 minutes, if that. It was just, I had so much to say and couldn't figure out the right way to say it. And it was a long time before I truly enjoyed doing it. And when I truly enjoyed doing it was when I finally stopped trying to write songs to make other people happy. Because that's what I was doing. I was back in the bar trying to please people and get them all on the dance floor. And that's not to say I was writing a bunch of up-tempo, positive, fun songs, but I was definitely thinking, what will somebody else think of this? Will somebody else like it? Will that producer like it and maybe cut it? Will that artist like it and decide to sing it? And the day that I stopped doing that was not only the day that I enjoyed it and found that maybe this is what I'm supposed to do, but it's also when people started cutting the songs and I started making a living doing it, which is par for the course. Everybody tells you to do what you do and listen to your heart and be yourself and yeah, whatever. Most of us have to learn that the hard way, the desperate way.
So how did you end up going from college to when you, I guess you had signed like a writing deal with Fame or something like that?
I signed a deal with Walt Aldridge. Walt had just left Fame and was starting his own company called Walt's Time over on Pine Street, close to the campus. And so I knew that, and the reason I knew that was Jana Malone. Jana had just recently come over to the program at UNA from Fame as well and said, I'm going to introduce you to Walt because I think you got something here, and I think he'll dig it and he'll want to work with you. And so I interned with him and convinced him, and he signed me to his co-venture with EMI in Nashville. So I never had to move to Nashville to get a deal. I always dreamed of it. I always thought that's what I was going to do after college, was go chase it, just like everybody else, because I had nothing going on. Nobody was paying any attention to me. No matter how many times I played in the bars, I had zero leads. So when Walt came along, it legitimized what I was doing. You know, I don't even pretend that that's not true. People would take my phone call. People would at least give me a co-write and give me the benefit of the doubt because Walt was involved. And then I had to earn it, which terrified me because I knew that Walt's name was on the line every time I walked into a room. And Walt was very exacting kind of guy. He did not tell me something was good if he didn't think it was good. He was not going to cheerlead and just pat me on the back for trying. you know, he would just say, all right, let's do another one, you know. And it killed me. It just frustrated me to no end, but it made me the writer that I am today. And I thank him every time I'm able to.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So y'all were just trying to, like, pitch stuff for country and artists and stuff like that?
Yeah. EMI being a global company, the beauty of it was, as my stuff trended less country, they were able to pitch it in New York and in LA and to London, and those offices got interested in what I was doing because it was not that country, and they were always wanting to work with Nashville office, but the Nashville office was always so country they didn't have that many avenues. I was some sort of hybrid that if they sent a writer from LA to New York to do a writing trip, I'd usually get to get in on it because I could go there. I could write pop or rock and roll or just angsty stuff, you know, whatever, and not be a music row writer. And so that got me a lot of opportunities. And through those opportunities, I ended up getting a record deal because of the demos and stuff that I was working with. I signed to Capitol out in L.A. and made a record with Mike Hedges that I'm really proud of, but never came out. The label, it didn't fold, but they fired everybody there and merged with another label. Their head of label stayed, so all their artists stayed, and anybody like me that didn't have their record out yet was canned. So
was that Long Goodbye?
Yeah,
I still love that record.
Thank you. I sat on it for a long time because I was pretty bitter, and eventually put it back out.
I'm glad you put it out in whatever form you could.
Thank you.
It was awesome. So I kind of want to talk about the local music scene. Mm-hmm. So our area is known for music mostly because of the recording legacy. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. I think so. Not being in the industry, just being somebody who lives here, I just think it's a really cool part of our town's history and legacy.
Yeah.
So what do you see as the future, I don't know, maybe 20 or 50 years, what's it going to take for this to, remain a music town, I guess? You know what I mean? Because a lot of the legacy was built on, these huge recording stars coming here, and there were a lot of really good hits that came out of it or records that came out of it, but, that model doesn't really exactly seem to be what's happening now.
Yeah.
What's it going to take for us to remain relevant
as
in the music world?
Man,
or whatever.
We could talk about that for a long time. And the first thing that I would say is, for the past 10 years, I have probably concerned myself with that, because it behooves me, but it also behooves my little record label, Single Lock Records, and the musicians that I work with, and inside and outside of the label. These are all my friends. These are all people I either cut my teeth with or taught me what I know. So I'm always trying to figure out how to raise all those ships with anything we do. But now, because of the pandemic, because of this 2020, I'm actively trying to figure out how we all stay alive. And not just the shows, just period. And I don't want to be all gloom and doom about it because I've never had much time for people that were just total pessimists about the music business. Yes, it's changed. Yes, we don't sell as much physical product and we never will again. And that's just how it is. And we just need to deal with that and figure out how to make the revenue streams work. But now nobody has a job, and I have no idea when we'll have it again, and I have no idea how many independent venues will survive. I mean, I'm hearing 90% will close their doors. I gotta think that the musician numbers are gonna be that way too. We can't just sit and wait. They're all going to go get jobs, and because they got to pay their bills. And if they do that, then we lose that art, because you can't just get back into this life. You know, nobody's going to come and say, "All right, we can tour again. Let's go, and everything be fine." It's going to take a long time to work all the kinks back out of it, and people build their base back. You know, not only is it going to be an awkward situation of trying to figure out how to tour, how to make money, how to find venues that are still alive, but convincing people to come to a show, to come inside a small venue and be shoulder to shoulder with somebody else, some people may never do that again. And we already were on a shoestring. We're already barely surviving. Our whole, you know, Taylor Swift's doing fine. You know, there's a number of those folks in the, especially in the pop world, that are doing fine because they're, most of their industry is based on streaming. Well, people are streaming like crazy because they're at home with nothing else to do. They're not going to shows, so they want to hear music, so they stream music. And that's, but if you're a touring artist, if you're somebody that really needs that to be, you know, to sell tickets to be able to fill out your bottom line, you're screwed for a while. And I don't know what's going to happen with all that. So I have to say, I'm not thinking locally right now. I'm thinking nationally and globally, because I don't know what's coming.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, we've been doing these webinar things or seminar things with the Recording Academy has had us be basically on the ground representatives of the area, and there's people all over the country that are doing it, and we get on these Zoom meetings with Doug Jones or Richard Shelby or Mo Brooks or whatever, and try to talk them into, you know, co-sponsoring, co-signing, supporting all these acts that are out there to try to keep us alive. And in those conversations, it's we have told them multiple times, and I think it's just dawning on them and everybody else that we'll be the last people to have our jobs back. Yeah,
I guess I know it, but I didn't know it.
I don't
that
think
it was that like urgent or, you know.
Yep.
That hard.
We'll be last, and the people that were already having a hard time, they won't survive. It's not possible. Barely were in the first place.
So I think I'm may ask like one more question. I think we'll. Mm-hmm. Good, thank you. I've enjoyed. No, I didn't know a lot of that somehow. That's awesome.
I don't talk to people very much.
So, what about you as a songwriter? Like, is this like the pandemic time or quarantine time been like fruitful for you, or just like sucky dry?
Horrible. I can't really put my finger on it, but I know I'm not the Lone Ranger. I've talked to a lot of artists that are in the same boat that just like. The creative juices just aren't there. I think when there's no quota, when there's no impending, the record cycle is ending and I need to create for the next record cycle and keep things going. And I'm tired of playing these songs on the road. So I'm going to write some new stuff and intersperse it in there because then I get excited again and none of that stuff's happening. And the other thing is I saw a political cartoon where had a guy in a boat and there's a hole in the boat and there's lightning and waves are crashing and all this stuff, and the guy's sitting there and he's like, "I think this would be a great time for me to write my next novel." That's what it feels like. It's just like, what am I going to write about? And God knows we don't need any more songs about quarantine or being lonely or alone or, you know, everybody out there is probably writing that crap, and but you're not living life. You're not doing anything. I remember Brittany Howard after the first record, maybe the second record, first record that Alabama Shakes put out. She said, "I gotta go live. I gotta get out of here. I gotta go somewhere else and live life, because I don't have anything to write about except for riding in a tour bus and playing shows." And that's very real. So on one hand, I'm thrilled to be home, because I love being at home. I love my family. I got a little studio next door. I love tinkering around with that. And I can still work with the label and everything. But I really miss connecting with people. I really miss that. And that's what got me back doing it again, was longing for that connection with people, playing songs and seeing in their eyes that it means something to them, that it's moving them, that it is articulating something that they don't know how to. And when that's gone from your life, plus your revenue streams are gone, and you're in the same house for 6 months straight, and you're a creative who needs to be interacting with folks, man. And so we try to check on each other, you know, people in our world, because some people are dealing with it better than others. But it's as tough a time as a creative has since this became an occupation.
Do you think you're always going to want to write and tour and
always
keep
want
putting
to.
Out records?
I always want to. I don't know how long I'll be able to.
Yeah.
You know, with streaming, I could still make records and put them in the world, but I'll tell you, if you're not doing it every day, if you're not in it, your head down in it, if you're working another job and you do it in the evenings or whatever, it ain't the same. And that mean you can't make, you know, you can't create great things, but it's a different level you go to when your head's wrapped around it all the time, when you immerse yourself in your work. And that won't be something that people can do, a lot of people can do in the future. They'll all have jobs, they'll all have to move on to something else, and the art is going to suffer greatly. And if I feel like my art has suffered to the point of, you know, it doesn't move me, it doesn't inspire me, and it doesn't, then I won't do it. I might write songs for myself or whatever, but I'm too much of a perfectionist. I can't let anybody hear anything that I don't think is, in my opinion, you know, valuable, worthy of their time.
Do you still feel the same way you did when you were 16 about your writing?
No. It depends on when you ask me. I'm in a good place now with entertaining and creating and stuff. You know, sometimes I don't really want to get in the bus or the van. Sometimes I don't want to write a song. A lot of times I don't want to do all the stuff in between. It kind of goes in phases. But there for a while in this pandemic, I was like, God, I miss all that stuff. And now, you know, all these stages of grief, I'm just at a place where it's like, well, this is how it's going to be from now on. And that's not good. That's not healthy. But it just doesn't feel like there's an end. And then when you see people out there not wearing masks and big parties, and you know that every single time that happens, you're another day away from being able to do your job. It just drives you crazy. Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking a minute to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Cool.